I'm going to briefly introduce all of our participants today, starting with Pat Brady. Pat Brady is the former chairman of the Illinois Republican Party. He's a former federal and state prosecutor. He became the chairman in 2009, and he served until 2013. As chairman during the 2010 election cycle, Chairman Brady helped elect Mark Kirk to the U.S. Senate, 5 new members of Congress, 2 Illinois constitutional officers, and led Republican victories in numerous down-ballot races. You can hear Pat Brady every Thursday and any other day that WGN Radio wants him on in the morning. And after his resignation with the Republican Party, he formed Next Generation Public Strategies, a Midwestern-based government affairs and media relations firm. Our next participant, Pat Brady. It's just down the dial at AM 560, The Answer in Chicago. Dan Proft is on every morning where he voices political commentary and has the morning drive show. Of course, we all know that Dan also ran for governor, was a gubernatorial candidate. He is a senior fellow at the Illinois Policy Institute. And he runs Liberty Principles PAC, which supports candidates committed to economic liberty policy agenda. And he is the co-founder of the Illinois Opportunity Project. Our discussion today, I should mention that our outset that our discussion is going to follow Marquess of Queensbury rules. There will be no mandatory 8 count after a knockdown. And it will be moderated by Tom Cross, who served ably in the Illinois House of Representatives for over 20 years, 1993 to 2015, when he decided to run for state office, state treasurer. Tom was the leader of the Republican leader in the Illinois House of Representatives before he ran for statewide office. He is now a distinguished fellow at Aurora University, and he is chairman. He continues his public service as chairman of the Illinois Board of Higher Education. Tom, Dan, Pat, the stage is yours.
Well, good afternoon.
Can you hear in the back?
As long as you can hear and also see. A number of years ago, I was here at the request of Jay Doherty, and he's become my good friend. I was in the House at the time, and in the leadership role, and at the time we had Governor Blagojevich, Emil Jones was the president of the Senate, Frank Watson was the minority leader in the Senate, I was in the House, and Mike Madigan was the speaker. And Jay said, before I came that day, he goes, "You've got to tell us what it's like in a leaders' meeting with Rod Blagojevich and Speaker Madigan and da-da-da and all the other people." Thought long and hard about it. And it hit me as I was driving into the City Club that day that there was only one way the only analogy I could think of was, and some of you were here, so you've heard this, is reminded me of when I was growing up. My mom and dad are both from Alabama. We moved to Chicago in 1966, West Pullman. My mom's parents were still in Birmingham, Alabama. My dad's in Gadsden, Alabama. And we drove in the family station wagon to Alabama, and you can imagine how much fun that was in the back of a station wagon on I-65 that, by the way, was not completed all the way. We got to about Gary, and the games began. And you all remember this. If you were in any car with your brothers or sisters, he looked at me, he touched me, he crossed the line, and that's kind of how it was in those leader meetings. And it was like, you can imagine Frank Watson leaning over and hitting Rod Blagojevich in the head and messing up his hair. And he'd be saying, "Emil, take care of that." So one of the great things about those trips to Alabama, it was so bad for my dad. We would stop at Shoney's or Jerry's, whatever they were called. And, you know, we'd do this in a day. My mom would be in the front seat. My dad drove the whole time. He would get to Shoney's, and sit down, and he would order a chocolate milkshake. I thought, that sounds really good. He would take that milkshake, though, and not drink it, and he would just put it on his forehead for like 3 minutes. I'm like, what the heck are you doing? And it occurred to me that he probably didn't enjoy that ride. So I mentioned that story because it was fun that time, and I think maybe there's some analogies today. I think if these two fellas, my friends, were in a back seat of a car, you'd probably have Dan in the right seat on the back, Pat on the left. And I think one of the questions for us today as we start this discussion, is there a center seat anymore? And is there a center seat for the Republican Party? And so what we're going to do today is we're going to start out with just an overview from both of them, both Dan and Pat. We're very passionate about where they stand, and both very, very bright individuals, as you know. And tell us where they think, we're past the primary. It was a contentious primary for both parties. We've had our organizational meetings. We're now 6 months out from the gubernatorial race and other statewide races, and, of course, House and Senate races. And the question I'm going to ask both of them to get started, and I've said to them, take 5 to 7 minutes on, where do you think the Republican Party's going in the next 6 months? What are our outlooks for the gubernatorial race and those other races that I mentioned? And maybe beyond, where are we going as a party? We're going to focus primarily on the state, but, of course, it's inevitable we'll probably have some discussion about the national party as well. So, Pat Brady, why don't you get started, and what's your vision, and what do you think, how does it look for the Republican Party as we move forward going into the election this fall?
The short answer is good. But first of all, I want to thank everybody for being here today, because to me that shows a lot of faces out there. I probably know everyone here, as Dan does. Appreciate your concern for the Republican Party. And you're concerned for the state. If we don't, this is probably the largest group of Republicans downtown since Lincoln received his nomination in 1860. So thank you. And this is because this is what it's all about. But I also want to take just 1 second as a personal point of privilege to point out my kids back there, 3 of the 4, Patrick, Kelly, and Grace. They're all, thanks. Kelly's a political science major at San Diego State. Patrick's going to NYU next year to major in political science. Maeve is at Indiana University in international relations, and Grace wants to be an FBI agent only so she can get a gun. And your mother's very proud of you, as am I, and thanks for being here, and thanks for being so engaged. But to answer your question, Tom, I think the future of the party in nationally in Illinois is a lot better than I thought it was going to be 6 months ago. But the reality is the only way we win nationally and the only way we win in Illinois is if we're unified. I can give you examples. In 2008, when Barack Obama won, and I was down here at the McCain campaign, and there were 200,000 people screaming for Barack Obama, the guy who had 76 days in the Senate before he became president, and this was going to be the greatest thing in the world, a lot of Republicans got unified, not because of that fact, but because of the policies. Obamacare, cash for clunkers, that stupid beer summit, all the nonsense that the Obama liberal agenda put on us. And in 2008, we became very unified as Republicans. And look what's happened since then. We've won 960 legislative seats throughout the United States of America. We drew the maps in a lot of these states in the United States. We picked up 12 governorships. And here in Illinois in 2010, Mark Kirk won Barack Obama's seat against Alexei Gianulis. And a lot of people said he was a weak candidate. Alexei was not a weak candidate. He was actually an excellent candidate. He was very popular with the Democrats. He was the heir apparent to Barack Obama at the time. And so we've had big years when we are unified. Give me another example. In 2006, remember the Peter Roskam race? Everybody thought Peter Roskam was going to lose. That was the worst year for Republicans in my lifetime. I remember watching or walking in the Kane County Swedish Days thing, and they have an elephant, the elephant was out there, and you could tell in the crowd that everybody in the crowd hated the Republican Party at that time. It was the Iraq War, it was a bad economy, it was a terrible time. We had a disastrous election. But the Republicans in the state of Illinois united behind Peter Roskam to beat David Axelrod and Rahm Emanuel, and they tried to put Tammy Duckworth in that seat. And the same thing happened here in 2010, as I just mentioned, in Illinois, when Mark Kirk won. I think we picked up 9 seats in the House. Bill Brady, and I remember in that primary, I think this is a good example of what we're dealing with. Now, Kirk, what was the 196 votes between you and Bill Brady? After that primary, Bill Brady and I grew up together, very good friends, and have been friends since we were basically born. I did not support Bill Brady. I supported Kirk Dillard. And we lost by 196 votes, but never during the course of that, wasn't even a recount, but the course they figured out who our nominee was going to be, did you hear a bad word between Bill or Senator Dillard? The party was unified. We came close in 2010 in the governor's race. We're paying for it now. But we were unified, so we won. 2014, we're unified behind Governor Rauner, unified as a party, and we win. The first time a Republican has won in the state previously held by a Democrat, by presidential, where the president came from, since 1892. Don't underestimate the impact of that victory for almost 4 years ago. He won by 5 points against Pat Quinn, a guy that's on the ballot every year in a very, very difficult state to win. The point is, when we're unified, we win. In 2016, we picked up seats in the House and in the Senate, 6 seats in total, because we were unified behind those candidates. This is in a year when we had Donald Trump at the top of the ticket. Donald Trump lost this state by 1 million votes, and we still picked up 6 seats in the legislature because we were united and unified behind our candidates.
So I'm not sure, are you done?
You want me to be done?
Well, no, I didn't want to interrupt you. Go ahead.
No, I'm not quite done yet.
All right.
Here's the thing.
Go ahead.
Because listen, there's nobody that likes to joke and mess around more than I do. I'm dead serious about this.
Yeah, I wasn't joking.
We are at, no, I'm kind of a kid. We're at a crisis stage here in this state, in this party. If we don't win this election next fall, as a Republican Party, we're going to be like New York, and we're going to be like New Jersey and California. Some of those states, California, New York, states where the Republican Party doesn't matter. Now, people make fun of the Republican Party. They did it when I was a chairman that were irrelevant. We were very relevant. But if we lose this race, and if we're not unified and we lose this race, we're in big trouble. And the Democrats know it because they have aligned themselves behind probably the worst candidate right now in the country running for governor as a Democrat. The Oppo book on J.B. Pritzker is 8 volumes thick. Everybody knows it. But the Democrats don't like what Republicans stand for. They don't like reform. They don't like our tax policy. They don't like term limits. They want to keep the status quo. And if we don't unify as a party and everybody in this room and get behind our candidate, Governor Rauner, we will not win, and this state will not be a place where we can live. I'm done, Tom.
All right.
Dan, let me just throw one thing in there to kind of, not to piggyback, but as we also move into this year, the importance of this election, I think, is as Pat said, is huge. But you also have redistricting coming up, as you well know, redrawing district lines. So I think it adds a little bit more to the discussion. So where do you see the party going in the next 6 months for all the things that I articulated earlier?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, Pat brings up the progress that was made during Obama's 8 years at the state level. Republicans control a supermajority of governor's mansions, supermajority of state legislatures. Certainly true in the Midwest. I mean, except Illinois. And so a little bit of a history lesson here. Because for 50 years, the Republican Party in this state has said, the way we beat them is join them. It started with Dick Ogilvie, a Republican governor, giving us the state income tax. And then you can take that if you need to. And then in the 80s, when the Reagan Revolution was visited upon the country, 40 states in 80, 49 states in 84, the Reagan Revolution didn't come to Illinois because Jim Thompson and the Republican center of gravity during the 80s under Jim Thompson was a big government deal-making, distribute the spoils of war party. And frankly, under Governor Edgar, even though he was a teetotaler and more personally disciplined, he was an extension of what we had in the 80s. He was a caretaker who gave us terrible public policies, for example, tax increase, for example, the pension ramp. Then George Ryan. How did that work out? And then after George Ryan's demise, 15 years about in the wilderness until Bruce Rauner came along. But meanwhile, the entire time, we're in the minority in the House, the super minority through much of it, minus that 2-year interregnum, 95 to 97. By the way, I was on House Republican staff under Lee Daniels during that time, so I know a little bit about what I'm talking about. I'm not just kind of a philosopher on the sidelines. I've been an activist. I've been in the meetings. I'm a participant. So then, George Ryan, terrible candidates for statewide office. Judy Bartzepink in 2006 gets 39% of the vote against an incumbent governor who's under federal investigation at the time. And then we missed the opportunity, as Pat mentioned, to elect Bill Brady against the feckless Pat Quinn. And then Bruce Rauner comes over the top with money in 2014 against the most unpopular governor in the country at the time, and he wins. And great, now we have an opportunity to follow the model, and this is what the governor said he would do, follow the model that was set by Mitch Daniels in Indiana, by Scott Walker in Wisconsin, by Rick Snyder in Michigan. Well, that obviously didn't happen. And so the pay-ons to unity, when always come after the party has done the bidding of the other side. That's been the history for the last 50 years. Now it's time to unify, and you'll note that the unity is always around a cult of personality. It's always around this candidate or that candidate. There's never a conversation, much less the establishment of an agreement, as to what it is we're unifying around, except this individual for this election cycle. And then no matter what that individual does when in office, that we unify around him again, or we unify around somebody else that we've determined should be the nominee or the leader, regardless of what they say they are going to do, regardless of what they actually do when given the opportunity. And that's why we're the super minority party in the state. And that's why we're trending, Pat's right about this, we're trending towards California, where the Republican Party is a legal fiction. You think we have one-party rule now, just wait the way this is going. And it's because the Republican Party, to borrow a Goldwaterism, offers an echo to what the Chicago Democrats have done. The joke that he started with, this is the greatest gathering of Republicans in Chicago since Lincoln got the nomination. Yeah, it's funny because it's rooted in truth. And that's a failure of the Republican Party for the last 50 years to compete in Chicago. We pretend that this 3 million person hamlet can just be ignored. And we can just run against it in the suburbs and downstate. We have a mayor running for his third term who's about as popular as Lyme disease, and we can't find a center-right candidate to run in 2011 against him, in 2015 against him, or now in 2019 against him. But we can be completely asleep at the switch while a fracking Nazi is nominated for the 5th Congressional District to run against Dan Lipinski. That is another failure of the Republican Party. I don't care how you cut it. I don't care how many nice op-eds you get from Richard Porter in the Tribune about how much we like Jews. It is obscene, obscene to have Art Jones represent our party and for any office. It's because we're asleep at the switch, because we care about whoever has money right now, because we care about whosever flag we have to rally around right now. And that's it. And there's no thinking, much less conversation, about elections as the means to policy ends. And oh, by the way, just to establish my bona fides for 1 minute, because I get criticism from both sides, and that's fine. I'm in the arena. It comes with the territory. But it's not like I'm some purist. I've gotten criticized from conservatives throughout the years for the candidates I've chosen, the choices I've made. I ran Beth Colson's reelection 3 times. Beth Colson was one of the most moderate members of the House, but she never had a Republican primary. And my philosophy was in Glenview and Northbrook, somebody with a 100% rating with the NFIB was better than a Madigan roll call vote, even if I disagree with her on a range of issues. So I supported Beth Colson with my PAC, because you're going to hear, I'm sure, that, but it's endless purity tests, and Proft only supports people who are like Proft or Tillman. It's nonsense. We've supported good candidates who disagree with us on a range of issues. Jonathan Greenberg, when he ran against Elaine Neckerts on the North Shore, he was for civil unions. I'm not. He was pro-choice. Ari Freeman is a great candidate, Navy chopper pilot and a pediatrician, ran against Julie Morrison. He's pro-choice. He was for civil unions. I'm not. Bob Kelnicki, when he ran out Roger Clare's way against Natalie Manley for civil unions. So this idea that it's endlessly purity tests is bunk. What it is, though, is a demand that there is something substantive that transcends any single individual and any single election cycle that unites the Republican Party to do something important if, God forbid, the people of this state ever gave us the reins of power.
Why not? So
let me answer that. And I've heard that speech a million times before.
No, you haven't.
Yes, I have. And the last time I heard it, it was the same stuff, and it's not a purity test, and anger and spitting venom and talking about how screwed up the party is and how terrible we all are and blah, 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 blah. But the reality is, Dan, and listen, everybody likes to listen to you, the people that listen to you on the radio, a lot less than they do on WGN, by the way. But the point is, all right, I'm just kidding. The point is, you've won nothing of significance. You've never flipped a seat. When you ran, you got 7%. You got creamed in the last cycle. In 16, when you were playing ball with the rest of us, you had a great year. The point is, this is all good stuff. And you and I, this is not Bennett. We can have a debate. But I want to win elections. And you
yeah,
don't
so
win
do
elections. Well, the rhetoric
so do
like that
I
doesn't
have.
Win elections.
And so let me answer
hold
you
on, one second.
One of your
hold
14
on one
charges.
Dan, hold on one second. Let me ask. Let's try to move forward in this discussion. And I realize there's history here, but let's see if we can. What I'd like to know from either one of you or both of you, what's a winning coalition for a Republican in the state of Illinois? And include in there what's a message for the Republican Party, and how do we be successful either in this election or in the next few elections as a party? How do we come together, forgetting the past? We can learn from the past, but how do we move forward and be successful? What's the formula? Either one of you, or both of you. Dan, you go first.
Yeah, the formula is simple. Pick your head up and look around. It's all around us.
Okay, what?
The Walker, Daniels, to some extent Snyder model of governance. It's a conservative reform path. It is free minds, free markets, and a free society. It is to defend people who are culturally ridiculed by the Marxist left, and is to advance the interests of entrepreneurs and job creators and productive people, while also maintaining the responsibility government has to the truly in need, like the developmentally disabled in the state, which we also do a terrible job of. Oh, by the way, despite all the high-minded talk from the members of the political class of both parties. It's not that complicated, but when you open with surrender, which is what the Republican caucuses have done for the last 4 years, including the governor, it's difficult to chart that path, and it's difficult to offer a distinction to the other side. And oh, by the way, since we're talking about these races and winning elections, and that's what Pat wants to do and I don't, let's see, 6 of 8 primaries in 14, 9 of 10 primaries in 16. We were in 16 of the 21 races we were involved in this cycle. And Jim Durkin's floor leader right now, Peter Breen, was a candidate I supported when Jim Durkin supported incumbent Sandy Pijos in Glen Ellen. So we can talk about elections. You want to go to the scoreboard? Let's go to the scoreboard, and we'll talk all day.
Yeah, well, I don't want to do that all day, but I will say in 16, when you got off message and got off the party and started going on your own and doing the same thing
that's,
you're doing.
That's not true.
Yeah, it is true.
Sam McCann, we backed an opponent to Sam McCann in the primary at the behest of the governor.
Yeah, here's a good point that nobody really knows. And I'm here to talk about winning elections. I don't want to have some big...
Doesn't sound like you are.
Well, yeah, I am. Have some big debate about Dan in the big words and all the... can't understand half the stuff you say, but the point is... The point is, yeah, I know, you're a genius. In 16, this is what Dan and Tillman and the rest of his crew that criticizes Republicans, criticizes Governor Rauner's very, very detailed agenda, which he didn't surrender on anything. If there's anything probably Governor Rauner did wrong, he didn't surrender. Let me finish. Jeannie Ives, 2 days before the primary, Jeannie Ives, and I got a lot of respect for Jeannie Ives, she said that she agreed with all of the governor's reform agenda. The only thing she didn't agree with is the Trust Act and HB 40. So she agreed with the governor 95% of the time. Jim Durkin stopped 130 pieces of Madigan legislation since Governor Rauner's been governor. So to suggest that somehow we're a surrender of Republicans, that's just Dan's way of saying, if you don't agree with me, you're not a good Republican, which I get sick of hearing, and we shouldn't support you. We can have very intellectually honest and sincere debates on both those issues and disagree but still be friends. But when you support 95% of the governor's agenda, like Dan used to until the governor wouldn't give him the money to run the races.
That's not true.
Yes, it is true.
It's absurd.
Well, it is true, Dan.
It's absurd. You don't know what the hell you're talking about, as per usual.
Yeah.
And let me tell you something else.
95% of the races.
You want to talk about issues? Let's talk about issues. Let's talk about it. You're wrong about Jeannie Ives as you're wrong about everything else because you don't do your homework. You just bloviate with Steve Cochran to a bunch of octogenarians on WGN. So go pound sand. Six of 73 legislative Republicans. 6 of 73 voted with the governor for sanctuary state. 6 of 73 legislative Republicans, Jeannie Ives not one of them, voted for his transgender bathroom bill. 0 of 73 legislative Republicans voted for forced taxpayer funding of abortion all 9 months of pregnancy. Zero. Only 27 of 73 legislative Republicans voted for the Exelon bailout, $2.5 billion bailout, where Pat was lobbying for Exelon. Jeannie Ives voted against it. Ronner signed it. So it's about cultural issues. It's also about economic issues. And I guess those 67 to 73 of the 73 legislative Republicans, they need to be drummed out of the party too, Pat, because they weren't with the governor and they weren't with you on those issues.
No, I just think that the Republicans need to quit listening to this. I don't know what you're so angry about. Really?
The numbers
what
are the numbers.
Because I'm sick of my party surrendering to the other side.
I'm sick of the state being the laughing stock in the country. I'm sorry you're not upset about it.
I am upset, but you know, we're all on the same team, and the anger.
I'm not on your team. You want me out of the party.
No, I don't want you. I just want you to quit running campaigns because you're not very good at it.
Right.
And wasting money.
Right.
All right, hold on.
We could go round and round and round again. That's all you've got. Let's go chapter and verse, buddy.
All right, hold on.
Chapter and verse.
Hold on.
For 20 years.
We got about. We're going to have to, one, narrow the answers. I'm just going to start. And then I'm going to run down a number of questions I have. You both are passionate about where you are. And we have a number of people in this party that follow and believe in what you're saying, Dan. And a good number of people feel the same way about where you are, Pat. How do we, without going back in history, how do we, moving forward, unify somehow this division so we can elect, whether it's Bruce Rauner, Darlene Sanger, House seats, Senate seats, etc. How do we come together in some way to be successful?
Now watch Dan's head explode here. We have. The only one that's not on board is Dan. The party, Tim Schneider has put, they reached a compromise after the election, recognizing the great gains that Jeannie Ives made, and put a conservative, very conservative Mark Shaw in a spot at the state party. And I think most Republicans want to win. Most Republicans don't want a progressive income tax increase. They want property tax relief. If we elect J.B. Pritzker, we're going to get all these things and more. They're talking about giving this progressive income tax increase. One of the proposals that's going on in Springfield right now is to increase taxes on people making $17,000 a year. I think Republicans are united. My whole point with this discussion is we can't be angry, screaming, yelling all the time and expect anybody to vote for us. They just think we're mean.
Dan?
Right. But we can expect to unify the party and present an attractive offer when Pat is running around saying John Tillman, Dan Proft, everybody who disagrees with me is a hater, and just dismissing all of the policy concerns of the conservative base of the party and telling people to get out. I mean, if the party's unified, Pat, I'm sorry, I guess this lunch is dismissed because we have nothing to talk about. The party's unified. I'm the only holdout. I apologize for wasting everybody's time. Everything's good. We are on our way to supermajorities and Republican governors as far as the eye can see. And anybody who believes that, please, you're welcome to leave and get on with your day.
My point is, this is not how you win elections. Right. This is not how you appeal to suburban
calling me
voters.
A hater.
No,
calling
this,
John
no,
Tillman a hater. That's how you win elections.
No, you know how you win. You don't win elections by putting up that transgender hate ad. You don't win elections like the Policy Institute by putting up that racist cartoon. You don't win elections by taking a stripper pole billboard and putting strippers for Durkin and run it in front of his daughter's high school when the kids got out of school. That's how you don't win elections. I can argue with Dan all day and have a blast and walk out and have a couple beers. The point is, I want to win. I want to win elections. And listen, I'm every bit as conservative as Dan is. He is not the voice of the conservative. Yes, you are going to bet. You ask me any question on the. I'm every bit as conservative as Dan. I'm pro-life. How do you like that? Is that okay for you?
Yeah. All right. Hold on. Time out. Let's ask. I'm going to go down and do a couple questions.
Well, the whole point of this, can I just say one thing? The whole point of this is, like, this is a binary between me and Pat. It's not a binary between me and Pat. Hate me, love me. Hate Pat, love Pat. Who cares? It's the trajectory of the party. What kind of Republican Party do you want to be a part of? What kind of state do you want to live in? It's your call. It's not my call. And it's not Pat's call.
All right.
All we can do is present options.
All right. Short answers. Look at all these things. Here we go. Why is the level of civility in this country, not just in Illinois, but in this country, it's such a low level? Pat?
And I know they've gone back and forth, and it's not.
Yeah, I don't mind. Listen, I don't mind
it,
going.
It's at a low level. Why?
Yeah, no, you know what? People, I think, talk about that too much. I don't mind having arguments with Dan on anything, and I think it's healthy and it's part of the process. But to me, it's a matter of respect, and the things I was talking about before that came out of the Policy Institute and Dan's campaigns, those are disrespectful. And when you put up a transgender hate ad like that, it
wasn't
goes
a hate. It was,
well, yeah, in my opinion,
I disagree.
Well, that's fine. That's good.
Right.
That's why we're here. Let me finish. But the point is, when you do that stuff, you not only lose the people. Jeannie Ives probably could have come close to winning that race had she not done that ad. She lost the Tribune endorsement
on
it.
Could have come close.
No, I mean,
she
come
close. 18,000 votes.
Well, whatever. But I'm saying that she might, maybe she could have won it, but she would have had endorsements. And people that were willing to give her a look because they're unhappy with the governor. Obviously, some of the people here might have given her a second look. But you put this hate ad up, or you put that racist ad that the IPI put up, or even what you did to Jim Durkin, where you're spending $2.1 million in a race that never got within 30 points. I mean, that's not how you win. It's just stupid. It's not good campaigning, and people don't like it, and they turn off. So
Dan,
that's why.
That's civility. Well,
that's from someone who's been around campaigns but hasn't run campaigns. The ad that Jeannie Ives did, that we did on that campaign, is the only reason she had a chance to win at the end. That's the fact of campaigns. And if you talk to actual operatives, they'll largely tell you the same thing. We aren't going to, you don't win races. You know, with all due respect to John and Kristen, you don't win races, Republican primaries or races in general, banking on the Chicago Tribune editorial board. I'm sorry, they just don't carry that much weight. This is a money game and a pierce the veil game when it comes to running insurgent campaigns against a guy with $100 million who's been governor for 3 years and $50 million in the bank. I hate to break it to people, but that's how it actually works.
So you're proud of that, Ed?
All right, Dan.
It was an illustration of policy choices the governor made. That's what it was.
President Trump, good or bad for us as we move into the fall election? Dan?
President Trump, good or for?
Good or bad for our Republican Party here in Illinois as we go into the election in
November? I think he'll be uneven around the state if you're thinking about legislative races. I think that he still has a lot of popularity downstate. I think he has popularity in pockets in suburban districts that are winnable. So it's going to be something where you've got to localize these races, nationalize them to some extent about the prospect of a Nancy Pelosi takeover, the way that Democrats were able to do to us in 96 when they took away the majority by nationalizing or by localizing Newt Gingrich and making some of these legislative races national races. That's one option that we have. So I think it's really mixed, but I don't think you run from Trump. I think you say, look, he's the President of the United States, as a member of the General Assembly, just as a statewide elected official. We need to do everything we can to work with the President to derive the benefits to Illinois from the federal government. And then you pivot and you talk about races that are local here, like property taxes.
Pam Brady?
I agree completely.
All right, we're done. He just said he agreed with him completely. I think we stop on that note, a high note. All right, next question. This is from Rebecca Shee, Illinois Business Immigration Coalition. Why is the Republican Party opposed to legislation that could support hospitality and agriculture industries? Pat Brady?
I don't know any specifics that are. I don't.
What's the legislation?
Yeah, I don't know.
Could be DACA, anything dealing with immigration. I apologize.
I'm sorry, immigration.
I said immigration. Yeah. I was not specific. Just immigration in general, Pat, if you want to seem to have
some
vision.
Yeah, that's another one of these issues that I think the far right of the party gets it wrong and costs us elections because they just take two, and the president with the wall. I mean, my two greatest idols as elected officials and thought leaders were Ronald Reagan and Jack Kemp, who both took would be seen by the right, liberal positions on immigration. I worked the border when I was in the U.S. Attorney's Office in San Diego, and it's a problem, but we need to secure the border. We have 16 million people here that we can't, we don't have 16 million pair of handcuffs. But we can't demonize everybody that's here and call them rapists and murderers and the things like the president does. We need to figure out a problem.
That's not what he's saying. That's not what he's saying.
But in this state, it's interesting. I travel a lot of the state, and I've probably been to every county. Downstate, the immigration issue is really, really big because that's becoming an economic blight down there as you go further from south to north. And it's a big, big issue down there. But I think the tone that the Republicans need to set is, hey, we get it. We have a problem. We want to fix it. But we're not going to be mean-spirited about it and take kids that have been, we're just by virtue of being born here, we're going to throw them back or do something bad to them. But it is there's some people in the room that have worked on the issue. And I think if we strike the right balance, we win more votes that way.
We shouldn't. Yeah, one of the things we shouldn't do as Republicans, one of the things we shouldn't do is repeat the left's talking points, mischaracterizing what guys on our side say. That's number one. Number two is it's a rule of law issue. I'm a pro-immigrant conservative, as most conservatives are. People who want to come to this country to build a better life for themselves, add value to this country, super fantastic. I don't believe in caps. I don't believe in any of it. I also don't believe in the welfare state. So there's where there's the rub, and there's the where you have to drive a compromise. But so a deal on DACA, the president came over the top on Democrats for a deal on DACA. I'll see your 800,000, and I'll raise it at 1.8 million. But you got to do something on border security. The left doesn't want to do border security, and you still have some never Trump Republicans like Pat running around denigrating the president. It's ridiculous. We can be a pro-immigration party as well as a rule of law party. The two are not mutually exclusive.
One of the next, one of the other big races besides the governor, not that they're all important, is the AG race. New candidate on the Republican side, Erica Harold. Thoughts on that race, Pat Brady?
I spent a lot of time with Erica Harold, and I was a prosecutor myself for 10 years, and she might be the finest candidate I've ever seen. She is Harvard-educated. African-American who went to the University of Illinois, got a scholarship to go to Harvard because she became Miss USA. I took her to a big event out in Kane County a couple months ago, and it was just amazing to watch her, the poise and maturity. I've known her for a while because she ran downstate two or three cycles ago. And to see people figure out who she was, and she's truly got star power, not just in the way she looks, but the way she carries herself, and then people figure out that she's the former Miss USA, and she handles it so well. She's so mature, so poised, and she's the most thoughtful candidate I've ever seen. There was some issue came up a couple weeks ago where it was a knee-jerk reaction by her opponent. Erica sat out for 24 hours, read the law, and gave an absolutely perfect response. So as we go forward, I'm going to talk about the party. If you want to build a party around somebody that could go all the way to the top and appeal to a lot of people that we don't appeal to right now, Erica Harold's your candidate.
Dan?
Yeah, I've actually known Erica since the 2002 gubernatorial campaign of Pat O'Malley, where she was an intern when I was the comm director. So I've known her before she won Miss America. So I've known her a long time. She is super, super sharp. She is a true, real deal Christian. She is not somebody who just talks it. She walks it. That's how she's lived her life. She would be a fantastic attorney general. She's a fantastic human being. I agree with Pat that she has the potential to be a party leader someday. And the real question we should be asking about down ballot candidates like Erica and legislative candidates is not the Trump effect, but the Rauner effect.
Yeah, that's just not true. I know it's a talking point for the WIND, but it's just not true. I've seen the numbers. J.B. Pritzker doesn't poll as well as everybody think he does. And actually, Governor Rauner polls a lot better. I think we kind of turned the corner last week with the way he handled the gun issue. So people want to give up on Governor Rauner. We got a long way to go. And a lot of the things he's done, 80% of what the governor, 70% of what the governor does, most people don't hear about. And a lot of the reforms that he's made within the operations of state government, including who gets access to meetings and who gets into the RFP process and the rest of it, Governor Rauner's done a great job of cleaning up. So as this campaign unfolds, you're going to hear a lot more about what he has done. And I don't think he's going to be a drag on any part of the ticket.
So real quick, this should be a quick one. Besides Erica, who are the future of the Republican Party farm team? Who do you see coming up?
Tom Demmer's going to be president of the United States one of these days. We have a lot of good young people. Dan's recruited some of them. We have Nick Sauer, Avery Bourne in the House, Jason Berkman in the Senate. A lot of good, young, talented people that really want to do the right things. I'm leaving people out there, but I apologize. But we have a very good group of young people that are committed public servants.
Dan?
Yeah, we do have some conservative backbenchers that I think have a lot of upside potential. Nobody that Pat named,
because they actually got elected. That's right.
I'm talking about incumbents like Peter Breen.
Yeah, Mark, good guy, great
and Mark,
guy,
and Mark Batnick. So I am talking actually about incumbents. People got elected.
You know what, Peter Breen? You couldn't get anybody better. Peter Breen is a quality human.
You're welcome. Since I had him against Durkin.
But that's back when you were working with us, not against us.
Yeah. I was working against you because Durkin supported Sandy Pios. You forget. No. You don't know your history.
Yeah, I do know.
Check your D2s.
I will.
Yeah, check your D2s. So Peter Breen, Mark Batnick, Keith Wheeler, Randy Freese, downstate Quincy, this guy who's going to be replacing Reggie Phillips in the Charleston area, Chris Miller, is a standout guy. So, you know, there's a good 15 to 20 conservative reform types that I think want to put their principles into policy action in the House and the Senate, but that's not enough.
Here's a question from Ed Bachrach. In 1995, the Republican governor and legislature made Chicago municipal elections nonpartisan. How did this help Republicans in Chicago?
How did it help Republicans
in
Chicago?
That's the question.
Didn't help Republicans in Chicago. It absolutely didn't help Republicans in Chicago. Making it nonpartisan hurt, but it's overcomable. And the first thing you need to do is, nominate somebody who believes in center-right policies. And again, we haven't had a serious adult center-right candidate for mayor of Chicago since Don Hader in 1987. And that is an indictment of the Republican Party. I don't care how you cut it. And oh, by the way, just one point of order. You know, as much of a problem as I apparently am to the, established order of things and how things are supposed to work smoothly in this state, I've never had a party title. As Pat said, I'm basically irrelevant.
So no, you've never No. You've never been elected to anything.
I know.
That's
I haven't been
saying.
Elected to anything.
Yeah,
I haven't had a party title. Why are you worried about me? You guys got it.
No, you got it all handled.
Don't sweat me, man. You got it all figured out.
No, we don't have it all figured out. But you're the only one that's not.
Who cares what I think?
I don't. But
I know. Who cares?
Why are you
worried about me? Why are you obsessed about me on GN?
I don't care. I don't think I've ever mentioned your name on WGN.
You mentioned it 15 times on election night. Ask anybody in the
crowd. That's right, because you had such a miserable night and went
after. So you do care about me?
No, because I know my point.
Well,
no,
which is it?
My point is.
Do you care about me or not care about me? Am I relevant or not relevant?
You know, deep down, I love you, Dan. You and I played a lot of golf together.
My point is,
you listen to this stuff, we lose. This is not our winning coalition. We can't be angry far right.
These guys have cracked the code on the winning coalition.
No.
Can't you see it all around you?
Dan, when you ran the same campaign...
Are you tired of winning in Illinois?
In 2010, you did this. I heard the same message downstate. You got last place with the angry far... This state in the city of Chicago, you can't... A center-right candidate's not going to win. It's not a center-right state. It's a center state at best. So you got to be smarter than the talking
points.
So
we need to recruit your buddy Tom Dart to run as a Republican. Or what is it we need to do in Chicago? Why don't we do anything in Chicago? You were state party chairman for 4 years. What'd you do?
Because you got to be smart and focus your resources.
What'd you do?
I did a lot in 2010. We had the best year and raised more money than anybody.
But in Chicago.
Yeah, you raised money for yourself, but you've never raised money for the party. The point is,
I spent $50 million of other people's money on other candidates in the last 6 years. What the hell are you talking about?
I know, you didn't.
Knucklehead.
Yeah.
You don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
Hold on.
This is what I'm talking about. Now, that
hold
right
on,
here, right there,
on.
That swearing. That,
oh, my God. Heavens. Oh, God.
You drop an F-bomb at the city.
I have another question.
Should I tell them the stories you tell me on the golf course?
Let's,
or are we just going to pretend one Pat Brady in public and another
let's go
Pat
with
Brady?
This question. Hold on.
You got to get anger, man. I'll grab a drink with you. Let's take it
all
down
right.
a notch.
All right,
no,
hold
let's
on.
Not.
Hold on.
Let's take it outside.
Here's
how about
that?
Hey.
I think we have about one or two more questions, right? We're about done. All right, here's a question from Richard Porter. If you're both in the back of Tom's family station wagon, which is pretty good, Richard, and could tell his dad to go to a historical site to make a point to the other, where would you go and why?
Wait, what?
Huh? This is a good question. If you're in the back of the station wagon, it can be anybody's, and you were going to go to a historical site to make a point to the other, where would you go and why? You guys want a couple seconds?
No, I'd drive him to Washington, D.C., and I'd do it at night, and I'd put him in front of the Lincoln Memorial, and I'd have him read the Gettysburg Address, and I'd have him read Lincoln's second inauguration. That pretty much, the Gettysburg Address is the best speech ever written. Every word means something. If you care about the country, if you care about the Republican Party, if you care about anything, if you read that address, you can't be taken by just every word and how important it is.
Good answer. You're done.
I'd take him to the Lincoln Library in Springfield before we have to sell it. And I would point him actually to a address that's much less known but just as important as the Gettysburg Address, and that's the address that Lincoln gave at Cooper's Union where he made the case to take the country to war over slavery. That's one of the most important addresses because the point that he made is you have to understand what the South wants. Don't believe the lie that the South will let us be non-slave while they're slave. Just leave us alone, the South says, but that's not true. The South will not stop until they take us over and make us slave states. The South will not stop until they get us to say what we believe to be morally evil is morally correct. They will never stop. And for some reason, we don't understand in this party, particularly in this state, that the left will never stop until they conquer us.
You know, and that's great. The thing about all this discussion and the rancor and whatever, we're all big people. We can handle it. But, you know, the Republican Party in Illinois traces directly to Abraham Lincoln. We can do better. We should be the party that wants to do good things and help people and not be angry people. We want to be people that help people have a good message and live according to our ideals. But I think we need to look more to Lincoln and Reagan than we do to the Sean Hannity show. I mean, I think that's where we are in this country, and that's where the party is going.
I think we also need to look to the party platform, and if this is going to be an expression of the principles and the policies that we believe in and will advance, then we either hew to them or change them. But stop lying to ourselves and lying to other people when we don't abide our own statement of principles. That's a big problem, too. In terms of helping people, again, the greatest failure in Illinois has nothing to do with tax and spend policy. It has to do with the fact there are 22,000 families on the PUNS list, urgent need of services for developmentally disabled person. And Republican governors and Democrat legislators, and Democrat governors and Republican legislators have all failed those families who truly need state services through no fault of their own. That's how barbaric Illinois has become. That's what a disgrace it is. It's an indictment of both parties. And nobody who's won an election gets away without culpability for it.
Hey, I completely agree. But do you think it's going to be any better with J.B. Pritzker? Do you really think giving Mike Madigan the complete keys to the kingdom is going to be better? We can have policy debates all day long. I want to win the election, and we don't win the election unless everybody in this room, whether you like me or hate me or like Dan or hate Dan, gets together to win this. Otherwise, it's going to be J.B. Pritzker, and it's going to be tax increases. None of the stuff, Dan, that you care about, that I care about, is going to get done. He's going to pay lip service to all these issues. No pension reform, no tax relief. None of the 44 things the governor ran on are going to get done. We need to be unified. That's how we
work. Three quick questions. Why don't we have a Republican candidate for mayor in the city of Chicago? From either kind of wing, if you will.
Well, I mean, because sensible people look at this and say, well, if I were to even consider this, I'm a successful person in the city of Chicago. If I were even to consider this, what kind of support is available? What is the point of this? I don't see any infrastructure. I don't see any interest. I don't see any path. So why would a sensible person who has other options in their life do that? Failure of the Republican Party. We need good people to step up, but when they do step up, there needs to be somebody there that's going to help them. And the Republican Party abdicated the city of Chicago a long time ago, much to our detriment, and we continue to suffer from that abdication.
But you have to start, restart, I guess.
Right.
Well, it's easy to say it's great that Dan could have been mayor, but the reality is he could never have won. You just can't win.
What are you talking about? I'm not talking about
you told everybody for 2 years or 3 years you're going to run for mayor. The reality is we're not going to win with a candidate, a far-right candidate as mayor.
I'm not running for mayor.
I know, but you intimate that to everybody. Like, why would a guy like me do it when I don't have support? You couldn't do it because you couldn't win. Let's be realistic. If we want to be smart about it.
I concede that I cannot win the mayor. Of Chicago.
Right.
But somebody else could.
You lead people on, like, why would a guy like me? Sure, Dan. The point is, we need to rebuild the township structures. When we really started getting in trouble 20 years ago with the party, we lost the township structures. That's why we lost so much influence in Cook County. The city, don't waste your time where you can't win.
All right.
But that's the attitude that where we got swept out of the south suburbs in 1996, and I was there. We never returned. We got swept out of the North Shore in the late 80s to the mid-90s. We never returned. I was there. So this kind of the other side is an aggressor and is pushing, like oil spot technique, pushing out to its outer edges to continue to expand its empire. That's how they got Jack Franks for 15 years in McHenry County. That's how they have Pat Brady's good friend, Tom Cullerton, in eastern DuPage County, where it should be Republican. So if we just continue to say, if you defeat us, then we'll cede the territory to you, that's how you shrink to this position we are now, where you have no margin for error to try to get to a majority.
Two quick questions.
It's just not smart.
Two quick questions.
I mean, that Paul Ryan was in last week, and their strategy is concentrate nationally on the elections you can win. And it's great. They're great sound bites. It's just not smart. And if you've got limited resources, you put them where you can win.
This isn't a one election cycle proposition, obviously.
All right,
but
two questions.
But if we never start to build the infrastructure that could bear fruit two and
right.
three cycles
we
down the
We have two
road.
Quick questions, and we're done. This should take one answer, one word from both of you. What state with a similar population and demographic makeup, this is from Alexander Brunk, can you point to where the state Republican Party has been successful recently in winning elections and enacting policies? What can we learn from where I got? What state? We're not going to ask the next question.
Massachusetts and Delaware.
Dan?
Florida.
No, that's not a blue state.
No, he said, what state that's demographically like Illinois?
Yes, yeah, similar population demographics.
In terms of population size, racial, ethnic diversity? Florida. Oh, and by the way, they have no income taxes, still have lower property taxes than us.
Last question from Tom Donovan. You kind of hit on this on the impact of Trump, but this question is a little different. I think it's a good one. President Trump is getting more popular every day in spite of media opposition. Why don't Republicans get behind him and get together? This is Tom Donovan's final question.
I think Republicans do get behind him when he does. My issues with Trump was he wasn't a conservative, and he ran the platform he ran on the isolationism, the tariffs and all thing he ran for president. He just wasn't a conservative. He's done some things I think actually great. The tax reform bill, the position that Pompeo just put out on Iran. I think I like the way he's handled North Korea, the regulatory rollbacks. He's done a lot of things, and I think we should get behind him for that. But there are other things. And he's his own worst enemy. And they get in the way, and then they hurt the rest of the party down ticket. But I think a lot of Republicans, including me, who I was not a never Trumper, I just didn't like the guy at the time the convention came around. I got on board. And we need to support him for those things that are within our conservative bandwidth. But when he ran, he was not a conservative.
Dan?
That's fascinating. So President Trump can be criticized when he veers from conservative policy positions, but Rahner cannot. This is so interesting. Who gets which passes? That's so interesting here. One of the things that we need to do, as I said, is embrace the momentum that President Trump has from the conservative grassroots and populists who despise the ruling class, because we've got a really despicable ruling class in this state, and they should channel that. And doing things like we're done most recently with members of the House Republican Caucus signing on and some refusing to not oppose a resolution objecting to Trump's infrastructure plan, that's not very sensible. But this is what happens when you have a Republican Party where it's every man for himself, and there's no leadership, and there's no structure, and there's no organizing principles. That's what you have. You have a Republican Party that is in the superminority and will continue to be until they decide to chart a different course. This is the choice going into 2018 and beyond. It is either going to be oblivion, California style, or it's going to be conservative reform and a resurgence like the rest of our Midwestern states. That's the choice. And embracing Trump's kind of neo-conservative populist coalition is going to be part of that.
You know, it's so interesting to listen to that. That you really think that if Bruce Rahner wins, there's all of a sudden this state's going to go from being center or center left at best to a far-right state that's going to support the kind of rhetoric that you put out. It's just fantasy camp. It's a good way to raise money.
I said nothing of the sort.
Yeah, well, that's what you're saying.
It's a straw man argument.
It's going to be a resurrection. No, to me, it's just kind of nonsense. Let's deal on the realities of what we got here. We're a center-left state.
Wisconsin.
All right, we're done. You both. So thank you both very, very much. I didn't get all your questions. I'm going to go get a milkshake.